Welcome to Life and Limb, a podcast from Thrive Magazine, all about living well with limb loss and limb difference. I'm Jeff Thiessen, publisher of Thrive Magazine, and your podcast host. Let's get right to it by introducing my guest, Marty Robinson. I've known Marty for about 30 years, and we actually see each other quite regularly, almost monthly, for a couple of hours in his clinic. He is my prosthetist, and with only a brief interruption when he left the hospital clinic where he was working to go work for Ottobock, when he returned with a private practice of his own, I quickly joined his client list, and here we are, 35 years later. Mm-hmm. Marty, let's start with when we first met, and it was the bar, and not a bar, the bar. At your sister's wedding. I was the plus one, my wife being a nursing college friend of your sister, Julie. Yeah. And I remember, well, I think you were staring at me and saying something maybe a little awkward or strange, yeah. But you quickly qualified to say, hey, I'm a prosthetist. And that made sense of what you had just said. So first, how are you? And second, do you remember that?
Oh, absolutely, Jeff. Well, thanks for inviting me on the podcast. Actually, we've known each other. If we count that as the initial meeting, that was 36 years ago, because my sister, I remember the wedding. So you and Brenda were invited to the wedding, and I was staring at you because you were grasping two very fine glasses filled with a delicious elixir. I think it was beer. And I was quite enamored of your skill level. So I was staring, but more from an appreciative of like, wow, that guy is, he's very good at that. Right. And I think I said, is one of those for me? And you quickly said no. and I think I approached you again later and introduced myself as, you know, Julie's brother, and that I was in prosthetics and I was quite interested in the field in general. Right. And then I think, yeah, from there on, we've known each other on and off in different situations, for sure. I love you, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. That's a great way
to become really good friends. I think people should know that.
We certainly have. When you see an amputee with prosthetics that you didn't make, Do you right away wonder who made those? Like, sort of, what is he wearing?
Yeah.
Who is he wearing?
Yeah, it's sort of like the fashion industry, right? But I think there's a respect too. Like we've learned to not judge too much about, sometimes people can be very critical and say, oh, geez, I wonder who made that. That's a piece of junk or whatever. Well, you never do that because you don't know the full story, right? There could have been a long, arduous process with getting to that level and achieving that fit. But we do. Yeah, we're always very curious of each other's work, for sure.
That's interesting. I was at a gas station once, and I was wearing a really old, beat up pair of what I call my farm or barn arms. And yeah. I know there was some duct tape holding a little bit together. And young guy, I think he was pumping the gas, asked me if I made them myself. And I never told you that because I thought that would be such an insult to you.
Yeah. Thank God for duct tape. Right. We all have to use it. But I mean, when you think about the field though, Jeff, I mean, a lot of the great inventions and even some of the quick fixes are done by the end user themselves. And I mean, a lot of the stuff that has become mainstream comes from people that have had to use prosthetic devices who have then become innovators in little quirky changes and really interesting developments, all the way to like TRS with Bob Radossi. I mean, an engineer who had a transradial below the elbow amputation, not happy with what's available. And so ended up developing his own line of goods, which became an international hit, and still being used today. So yeah, it's important to learn from the end users. Like today I was in clinic and one of my patients needed some advice on how to adjust a socket that was tight in the bottom and loose at the top. And I said, well, one of my clients talked to me about half socks. Would you like me to tell you about half socks? Well, I mean, it seems like such a simple thing, but I mean, it's it's a great solution for everyday problems that people have to deal with, right? So it's kind of cool to think of, everyone thinks of these sophisticated designs and developments, but there's many cool things that have come just from people who use prosthetic devices and come up with their own fixes, which then get transferred back to the prosthetist, who then shares it hopefully with other users, right?
Well, probably one of the best examples is what was formerly known as Flexfoot, the Osir Cheetah. That was developed by a lower extremity amputee, Van Phillips, maybe.
Right? Yeah, Van Phillips. Right. Exactly. So again, I mean, sometimes if it happens to be somebody that has some, either biomechanics or engineering background, and they happen to be, have lost a limb for whatever reason, and then just take an interest in that, which he did, which Van Phillips did, and look at how that boomed into. It's amazing, really. And you can give many examples. Another good example is the total knee. The total knee is a polycentric knee joint that has become, very popular in the field. Actually, it's one of Osir's offerings now. It was developed by the father of a young girl who had lost her limb to, I believe it was cancer. And he was not, again, he was just looking for a smaller, more geometric type of knee joint that folded up on itself. She had a very long limb. And so he just came up with this design, which then became a product. So it's, I think the more you look into the industry of prosthetics and orthotics, there's a lot of really cool stories like that.
No, I'm sure. Let's jump into the field of prosthetics, and it intrigues me, knowing, intimately, in the sense of how a prosthetist and a patient relationship, client relationship work. So, yeah, I mean, it's science, it's art, it's social science when it comes to those relationships. I want to ask you how and why you chose this profession, but let's start with, what was your first job way before being a prosthetist, maybe as a teenager? Where did you start?
That's a great question. And you know what? I think about a lot. Because I remember applying for this job. It was in the paper in Woodstock. I grew up in Woodstock, Ontario, from grade 6 on. I lived in about 5 different other small towns before that, but ended up in Woodstock. And there was a job for stock boy. They use the term stock boy, not stock car boy, but stock boy. And you had to be, and they were very specific, you had to weigh at least 140 pounds and be able to pick up and move like something like 75 pounds. They're very specific. I was like, I weighed about 115. I could maybe lift about 15 pounds, but I applied for the job anyways. And I was lucky enough to get that job. They gave me a shot, and that was a great job because it was at the time, that was when they were still weighing out nails for clients, right, in the back room. And the stock boy was just had to do anything and everything. And I loved it. And they just came back and said, yeah, we want you to paint the back room. And I was like, I had no clue how to paint. Right. And I just started painting, and they kind of guided me through it. And all the way from writing everyone's names on the styrofoam cups to filling it and getting everyone's order and stuff like that. So there was a social aspect of it, but I loved, one thing I realized being the stock boy is I love the interaction with a client, with a customer. So the one-on-one stuff, I craved it. So I realized that about myself is that I really liked that, almost kind of the responsibility of working with somebody and finding it, working on a solution. They're looking for something for taking off paint, priming the wall, whatever. So that was my first job. Good segue though would be another job in high school. This is before they disbanded the hospitals. They used to have hospitals for mentally handicapped. They used a lot worse terms back then, but for anybody that was incapable of living on their own. So a lot of people some of these people were dropped off as children. They were perfectly fine people, but they were dropped off as children, had to really be institutionalized. So it was an institutionalized place where people of all levels of any mental handicap or their challenge, and they needed assistance with taking care of themselves. Well, that hospital was disbanded some years ago, but at the time, I got a job working in the tuck shop. And again, I loved it. Interacting with people, and I just really, really got a charge out of that. So it kind of steered me in a little bit in, I guess, feeling like a connection to anybody that maybe is looked upon differently from other people. And I just really, I don't know, I had a different way of engaging with anybody like in that situation. I just feel that I connected much quicker and was a little more passionate and compassionate about that. So
you saw a job posting for certified prosthetist. Like, I don't remember that being on the aptitude or the vocation guidance counselor list when you and I were in high school in '70s.
Yeah, I didn't
and
even
80s.
Know what it was, Jeff. I mean, but I mean, I wanted to be a phys ed teacher out of high school. Loved sports and all that kind of stuff. But a couple of my buddies were going down for Guelph's March counseling, which was an investigation into what courses Guelph offers. Well, they had one in human kinetics. Again, didn't know anything about it. Really kind of caught my interest. And I really went along just as a comrade because we're going to do beers after, right? And it was like, oh yeah, let's go check it out. Ended up being fascinated by it, went back, changed my transcripts, put Guelph on top, and luckily got into Guelph. And that was a 4-year adventure. Loved it. But again, human kinetics on its own, or kinesiology on its own, isn't always the completion of your education. It's a stepping stone. A lot of my ex-classmates got into ergonomics, physiotherapy. Some of them became doctors. Some of them, a few of us got into prosthetics and orthotics. And that was, thank God, we got a course in third year, which was about prosthetics and orthotics, which at least got my interest. So after I graduated, I was like, how can I apply my kinesiology degree? It wasn't a standalone at that point. Not enough people knew about it, knew what the impact, or even what do you do? And you're like, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I started looking at prosthetic orthotic opportunities in the field. And luckily, it just, a lot of times by chance, people out there, it's by chance, right? If you're looking, you'll find it. And somebody had canceled their co-op position at Hamilton at Should Oak McMaster. It was because they had a Waterloo co-op program with the kinesiology there. And so someone had canceled, and at the last minute, the guy was like, can you start on Monday? There's a position, pays minimum wage. And I'm like, I'll be there. And so that for me was the start of all of this. And I just, as soon as I walked in that first day, I was like, yeah, this is for me. Like, it was that Reese's peanut butter cup, like you said earlier, art and science collide. And it's just a great combination. If it suits your personality, which it did for me, there's the patient contact part of it, but there's also the puttering and problem solving, and not everything's perfect, but you got to try to work out a solution.
Well, on that people part that you talked about loving so much at the tuck shop and being the stock boy, I mean, there's a whole lot of that in what you do now. And, you know, we come from all walks of life, amputees, you know, there's all facets and the diversity in it. And, you know, some of us are still having a hard time. Some are not. Yeah. Some might be hard to please, be it a new amputee or a seasoned one. Some might be critical of your work. So how do you manage that? How do you find that balance? Where are the boundaries?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's the toughest part. And I still not struggle with that, but I mean, I think you have to just remain humble. And my dad always used to say, you're only as good. And you've heard this said by many people, like, you're only as good as your last whatever. So, I mean, prosthetics, to me, the beauty of it is that it's always morphing and changing. It's always about the person. So everyone's different. For me, it's about figuring out the person. And there is a person there. I'm fitting a person, not a stump or a residual limb. I'm fitting the person. So the more time you take to understand and learn and appreciate what they are looking for and what they will guide you. Like if you work together, you always kind of you're going to get there. So I think it's like in many professions, I think listening is really key. We definitely could have had more psychology in our training. We're kind of armchair psychologists in a way, but I think on the job you learn, and I've become better at it. I used to overpromise and underdeliver in the beginning because I wanted to fix everybody and everything and promise. Oh yeah. Oh, you want to rock climb? No problem. Oh, you're 85. You've never rock climbed before. No, we'll get you rock climbing. But that's a bit over the top. So I think it's all about setting expectations that are realistic and really finding, searching the individual's needs in a sense of what's going to get them the most satisfaction or in their life again and get them back to where they were. They feel good again about themselves. Their self-image is going to be restored as much as possible. I mean, again, that's expectations. But that's the part that intrigues the hell out of me, Jeff.
When one of us, me being a double arm amputee, aren't happy with, we're not happy with your work. Yeah. I mean, we're taking it personally in a way that's, it's not to say that's your fault, but what can we come to and blame? It's gotta be you. Do you take that personally? Are you sensitive to that? How thick is your skin?
I think so. But I think that's what makes you better too, because if you don't take it personally, then you don't try to, try to improve. But I think initially I would take it personally to the point where I, would take it home with me and I would really let it get in my head and that kind of thing. Now, I mean, I take it personally, but I always try to think, okay, that person's telling me something and they're probably a lot of the times, it's like anything when, it's hard to take criticism, right? But if you can understand that what the criticism, the direction of the criticism, some people give it a little harsher than others. But again, I don't want people to suffer in silence. Like if someone's hating me and they're at home and they're afraid to tell me that it's not working, I'd rather that they come in and say, listen, I'm not happy with the way this turned out, or it never really felt like it fit right from the beginning. It gives me a chance to, there's redemption, right? You can try to make it better. And most people, 99% of the time are very, very patient with us, and we're very patient with them. It becomes a give take thing. And when you get the give take thing going on, that's when you really can get stuff done. And you and I have been through that, Jeff. Like you're very understanding. I mean, there's times when you, I've let you down and I acknowledge it. But the thing is it makes me not want one. I don't want to do that again. I don't want you to lose another. I want you to get that teddy bear next time at the exhibition. I don't want your hooked cable to come flying off. That's a really good question. I think a lot of us struggle with it. And again, it's personality of the prosthetist. Sometimes you're going to meet people you just don't jive with. So 1 out of 100 times, it probably doesn't work. And maybe sometimes they got to go somewhere else, or they acknowledge that, or you acknowledge that, like I've done my best and we don't see eye to eye. Maybe it's me, there's a lot of good people out there you could check out. But in most cases, you can work it out. And it's just a matter of, like I said, you give me a little bit and I give you a little bit. Like it's that give and take thing. And it takes a lot of patience on both sides, for sure.
Yeah, nice, really nicely said, that balance and compromise both ways. Yeah. Let's switch gears a little bit to prosthetic repairs, the bane of my existence. Yeah. But I'll give you a second to think about this as I remind you of a story of how surprised you were one day in the state of disrepair that I showed up at your office. So I'm going to ask you about, surprises that people have come in with complete train wrecks of your good work. And the one for me was that I totally destroyed an elbow, bent a hook straight. And when you ask what happened, I told you, my horse dragged me across the backyard. And the only way for me to let go of that rope that I was hooked into, literally, was for the elbow to just crush and the hook to bend itself open. I'm sure there are even better stories. Is there anything that comes to mind where
Yeah, I mean, it's life, right? There's you're living your life, and I mean, stuff is going to happen, and the prosthesis is going to be the brunt of some of it, right? We've seen all kinds of different you know, home remedies to deal with, you know, broken parts, right? I mean, probably the most recent and first time I've heard this is a gentleman was ice fishing and walking out to his hut and walked over a hole that had been recently frozen, maybe the day before or whatever. He didn't see it. It was on his prosthetic side. He's a below the knee amputee, and skaboom, his prosthesis went. He went into the hole and he yanked his leg out, and there was not a prosthesis attached anymore to his limb. So if anyone from War Amps is watching, this is a true story. We actually told the truth to the funding agencies to say, we need to get this gentleman a new prosthesis. He did it, nothing wrong, other than was the victim of a little hidden ice fishing hole. So
these things happen.
But these things happen. We've seen, you know, people have, for example, used the prosthesis to put out a fire, you know, that was happening in their house. And the prosthesis became a, you know, the casualty of that process, right? And, you know, like when someone brings in a melted, the hand is melted and the glove is melted, and that it's like right away you think, what happened? But then I've had some people say, thank goodness it was my prosthetic leg. Like, you know, they got in an accident, and if it had been there, you know, I mean, they would have been really severely injured. But, you know, it's a part that we can replace, and we can restore that. So, but yeah, there's been some interesting fixes too. And some people, again, have come up with some brilliant, brilliant ideas to fix stuff. It's really creative, let's say. Like sewing stuff up. I saw this woman recently, and she must be a seamstress. Honestly, her prosthetic sleeve that holds the leg on. I hadn't seen her during COVID. You know, COVID was, you know, kept people away from us for a long period of time. So she came in after COVID, and she needed to get a new sleeve. But in the meantime, it had torn, and it had, and she had sewn up every single little, you know, tear and rip, and it was actually, it was like a quilt. I was almost like, I don't really want to throw this out. It was almost like a piece of art, you know, and it was so well done. And she had taken the time to, you know, to keep this intact. So yeah, when things say, like that.
When you
that's
say
why I'm smiling, because I'm thinking of all the stories there.
Oh, there's gotta be so many. Yeah. Speaking of taking the time, question for you. Why does everything related to prosthetics seem to take so long? Getting limbs made, waiting for parts, waiting for repairs in the clinic. What's up with that? Share it with us.
That's
how and why we should be more patient.
That's definitely a chronic problem. But I think that, you know, I think we're guilty too of, again, it's about expectations too. Like what I try to do is, you know, because there are some realistic timelines that are not as tight as what people would maybe expect and maybe have been told. So I think, again, it goes back to right from get-go when you establish a relationship with your prosthetist or orthotist is to get an idea of timelines. And some of us are bad at just, you know, starting something and then putting it aside and not finishing it. Well, for me, the main thing is having having a kind of realistic turnover for things, like first casting 2 weeks later, first fitting 2 weeks later, you know, so having some sort of cycle. And that's what I recommend to my colleagues, and that's what we try to do. But I think, again, things do take longer than what people expect. There's definitely, you know, there's definitely the need, I think, for more of us, more individuals doing what we do. I think that we could have a better turnover if we had, you know, more bodies involved in doing this. I think a lot of it, and I'm not pushing this back on the government, but I mean, for example, in Ontario, we haven't had a raise for 14 years. So the, you know, the pay has stayed a little bit mellow. And I think if we could afford to have more people doing this, we could turn things over a little bit quicker. But again, I think it comes down to, you know, you don't want to disappoint people. Say, oh, I'll have that ready for you next week. And then, you know, 4 weeks later, they still haven't had a call. Well, what I try to do is say that I can deliver on a two week schedule, and I try to really maintain that. And I think that's realistic.
You talk about expectations, and along the same line, advice for, well, maybe any amputee, but new amputees particularly who don't know, you know, their expectations don't have any context or experience to them. So what advice would you give to new amputees about that, about new fittings and new technology, maybe? Yeah. How do you sort of, you know, put a blanket or put your arms around that?
Yeah, I think it's educating people, because I mean, it's the fear of the unknown. That's the way I always think about it. You just don't know what's coming up. Anything that we can do to connect people, for example, 2 weeks ago, I was in Guelph, and we had a brand new amputee, young gentleman, 41 years old. I mean, this is a traumatic event in his life, and you could tell he was hurting, right? And I had another gentleman who's in his 60s who had been an amputee of the similar level. And I was like, hey, Brad, do you mind going just talking to this guy just for a few minutes? And I mean, the amount that this guy got out of that connection was huge. So I think things like that, I think, you know, I think giving people a good guideline and timeline of how things are going to go down, and that there is hope. Like, you know what, this prosthesis can really provide you with a lot of function and mobility that you've lost. And I think again, to answer your question, is really engaging and informing. And you know, people want information at that stage. They're lost. They don't, nobody's, a lot of times they haven't been talked to that much in the hospital. I'm surprised at that. So we like to give them a little bit of a window and a look ahead. So a little bit of forward thinking on what's coming up, and that encourages them too. They're always surprised to think, oh, I'm going to be walking in 2 weeks. I'm like, yep, we're casting you today. And you're going to be up in those parallel bars walking in 2 weeks. And they're like, oh my God. Really? And I said, yeah. And I said, I'll bring the Kleenex, because it is still, for me, 35 years later, the best part. Like when you get someone going again for the first time, it's a great feeling. And it's just, you somehow you share their joy. And it's a lot of hard work. You know, we try to tell people too, it's, are you up for this? This is going to be, you know, it's going to be a lot of hard work, but we're going to work together, and we're going to get there. So it's encouraging. It's informing. It's, you know, it's a lot of coaching, and there's a lot of people that are involved, but you know, I share their energy, my energy with them, and man, I get a lot back too. So it's fun getting someone going for the first time, for sure.
Oh, I'll bet it is. And that's really cool to hear you say that, you know, it's not a production line in there. There still is that human connection. And
yeah,
I would imagine 35 years in the business and working with people, you're learning all the time, let alone the new technology that's always coming out. So, I mean, if you had to think back to when you started and what you know now, is there sort of one thing or a couple of things that you wish you knew when you started in the profession that you know now?
Yeah, that's a good one, Jeff. Boy, that's deep. But I think I wasn't aware of how much I could push myself to, you know, just to do more, like to get deeper with any problem like that might exist. Because there is technology, lots of technology available, but you know, it's not even about that. It's about, for me, it's not afraid to make the connection and the commitment. I guess that's what I would say that I learned from when I started out at Shadoke, when I didn't know anything and was, you know, motivated and excited and everything, but didn't really know what I could offer and how far I could extend that. But now I guess it's the confidence, knowing my limitations and knowing how far I can push myself to push somebody else, right?
And you mentioned earlier too about not overpromising.
That's a really big part of it too, is expectations, like defining things in the beginning when you're starting a new project and a new commitment with somebody, is to really be honest. And you know, not everything's positive. I think it's so easy for us to get somebody all pumped up, and then sometimes they're let down because we kind of oversold it. And I think anyone would appreciate the real story and the real picture. And if they know that a big part of it is their commitment and their energy in the project too, like it's everybody's place, right? You're going to work hard and you're going to get a lot out of this. I'm going to do my best for you. The therapist is going to, you know, try to really be engaged in helping you learn how to get off the floor and you know, how to do all the different phases of gait and what kind of training and exercises you need to do to prepare for that. But I think laying it out in the beginning and being very honest is really important. And you know what too I learned, Jeff, is now that I think deeper, is I take more time in the beginning of starting a project now. Before, I was in such a rush to get on with it and get going, and I felt that pressure of getting things done, that sometimes I didn't take the time to really figure out where I was going and what was the plan and what are we doing here. Like, get as much information in the first couple of visits with a new client as you possibly can. Because once that person leaves your clinic, then you're kind of speculating at that point, and you're maybe losing some of the information is lost. So yeah, I just take more time in the beginning to really, really, you know, get as much information and as much of the detail that I need to make decisions on what kind of foot to go with, what type of socket style, you know, upper extremity wise. I mean, would I talk you into myo? Maybe back in the day I would have tried, but when I see the way you live your life, I'm like, that wouldn't have made any sense. But I couldn't have, you know, imagined that at the time. It would have seemed like more is better or more expensive is better. Well, that's not always the case. So yeah, I think just slowing down the beginning. I worked with a German colleague for a few years when I worked with Ottobock, and he had a great approach. He was never in a hurry to go to the next step until you're completely happy with the first step that you're at. And you know, from having sockets fit, that that's usually the check socket stage. Do not go to finishing the socket until you're 100%, you know, confident that you're there. Do another check socket. Do another fitting. It's not that much.
Yeah. But you've got us too wanting a rush too. We want stuff done quickly too. It's not just
the practice. And it's sometimes we both collectively suffer from that approach, because what happens is it could be better. It could have been, you know, a better end result, but it does take time.
Do you ever think about what you might be doing if, you know, this prosthetist profession didn't work out for you? Like, and aside from tuck shop and
I don't know. I like teaching. So I did teach for a while. I taught at Guelph. I taught at in the college in prosthetics. So I got a lot out of that. I think I would have liked teaching. But this is special. Like, this, You know, people, some people even ask me, they go, so, hey, if, you know, and they say, you know, what would you have done if you, I go, I would have done this. Like this, it sounds so cliche, but like this for me was the perfect fit. Like this was, this is a job that I don't have to get psyched up for. I'm 61. I'm not ready to retire. People are asking me about retire. I think about retirement, but I'm not ready to. I feel like I'm not done yet. I'm still enjoying it. And it's just, it's different every day. And it's that challenge. It's the human connection. There's so many relationships that you establish. It's pretty intimate type of relationship too. This is different than, I'm not at the Gap helping you pick out a pair of jeans. This is way beyond that. This is part of you. This is part of your self-image and your mobility or in your case. I mean, we know you've got to have three sets of prostheses going at any one time, or it's going to mess up your day, your week, your month, your trip, your whatever. Right. So yeah, it's very, very important to realize that.
I mean, I've had a chance to speak at some of the your professions conferences, and I've talked about, you know, pulling back the curtains on our lives. You know, here, you know, in this episode of Life and Limb, we're pulling back the curtains on your profession. But, you know, those couple of hours we spent together a month, all my other working or waking, I should say, all my other waking hours are dependent on the work that you did in those couple of hours.
Yeah, and I take that seriously. And I think anybody in the profession, if they don't, then they're not going to probably, I don't know, you're going to fall short because, yeah, it's, people say, yeah, you got to leave your work at home. And, a lot of the new thinking is, you know, you work to live. But yeah, well, okay, I get that. But when I'm at work, I take it seriously, I guess, the impact of my actions. And I mean, I've gone to people's homes. I mean, my family would even say to me, why do you do that? I go, I don't know. I have to. Like, it's just, that's important to me. It's not just for me leaving it at work. It's in a pinch. And I mean, I can't do it for everybody, but if somebody called me and said, listen, I'm going to Cuba tomorrow and my foot's facing north and it should be facing south. And I have to take an hour out or 2 hours. Like, why wouldn't I do that? Right. So, I mean, don't everybody be calling me right now and telling me that.
I'm just thinking selfishly. Retirement will come for you. So this is good news for me.
That's a personal thing that I did. And it gives me peace. I don't know. It's just something that I've always done. And it's my personal decision. I wouldn't recommend that for everybody. Not everybody's into that. But for me, it worked. I always kind of felt like I would be available if, you know, on demand kind of thing.
Should we
and
give
people your respect phone? Your time. They respect your time. They do.
Should we give your phone number right now? Or maybe
yeah, sure. And I live in Palgrave. I can give Brad's address. I think go over to his. He's got more of a shop over there. That's the honest truth, though. Like, I do. I've always just been that kind of person. And my parents were like that. And, you know, it's just, it's nice to find a profession where you can satisfy that little, you know, that little part of you, that little cell in there that you get a buzz from going that extra little distance. Right. And there's so many people in this field that are like that. And that's sure. Probably why they maybe in a way they got into this. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Last one for you. And this is one I like to ask everybody that joins me as a guest. So a great day for you. If that's the recipe, what ingredients go into making for a really good day for you?
Great day. Well, we have to keep this PG-14. Okay.
Not a bad idea.
Okay. Well, I love the outdoors. So a great day for me would be to start by doing something a little bit physical outside, you know. I would love to have my family around on that day. I love having my family close. We do a lot. We still do a lot together. I don't know. That's a really good question, because I'm almost saying I'll get my car and go to work, but is that bad? That's why I'm struggling with retirement, because I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm not that good. I mean, you can only make so many mediocre birdhouses, right? I mean, there's not a huge market for it. But it would involve people. Like, I like having people around. I like my private time after work, but I do need, I'm lucky I get a big fix at work, engaging with people. So at some point in the perfect day, I like to engage with some close people that are close to me. I like to laugh. I like to make people laugh. And I'd like to travel more, a little bit more. So a perfect day would probably be maybe in a different location than a place I've never been before. Meet some people that have a little bit different culture. I know you and I have been to Belize. Like, I mean, those kind of experiences. Well, I think I might have had a perfect day there. Just the feeling of being in a different place where you've helped some people that would normally not have
Well,
those
again,
tools.
yeah, for context for everyone, that was sort of a working trip, but you were helping some folks in a very poor village that had no access to prosthetic care, with not just donated componentry, but your time and your expense, and how appreciative they were of that. We know that. So, I mean, that's
Things
not what we
are
were looking
like
for,
that.
but it was to help them for sure.
Yeah, I'm appreciative to you for even, including me in that trip. And I mean, that's a highlight, one of the highlights of my career, actually, was doing that. And so perfect day is family, food, outside. I mean, I like to travel and new experiences. So, I
And
mean, if
maybe a home prosthetic visit to someone's home to help out a little bit.
Well, I swear, if I could be like in the Airstream, have the Airstream trailer with the little prosthetic clinic in the back, and just travel around and still do what I do. I mean, because I do love this, and like I say to some people, hey, this is the only thing I'm good at, right? So it's like, but
Marty's
I enjoy it.
mobile. I like it.
I get a lot out of it, and then that's important to me. There's a lot of satisfaction in the job, a lot of job satisfaction for sure.
Wow, what a great place to end. And you've shared so much that I think all of us can just kind of go, for a minute when it comes to our relationship with prosthetists and how you see it. And I mean, your perspective, because like I said, this is kind of pulling back the curtains. And when we're in that clinic room and off you go with our limb to fix it, now we don't know what's going on back there and why it's taken so long.
Don't be afraid to push us, so, because we'll be better. And Jeff, you've made me better, because you've challenged me. And again, I think that it's about honesty, and when you get a good relationship with your prosthetist, I mean, that's a pretty sweet thing, because they wanna do. I mean, it's like I said, give and take, but they really want to provide as much as they can for you. With There's no reason in this day and age, like, there's so many great things coming. I mean, as far as technology, and there's so many great things existing right now that we can offer. But the only thing that hasn't changed is patience and understanding and listening. Those things will always be important, whether we're getting 3D printed devices or what have you, or AI gets involved in some capacity, or there's osseo integration, which people are experimenting with or investigating in this moment, right? So I think that the thing that will always be the same is, and always be a part important, is the human element and the connection. And the connection for me is what allows me to be, I mean, a little bit better at my job, for sure.
Sounds like that's what you really love about it. So listen, thank you, Marty. This has
You're welcome.
been
Thank you
terrific for sharing.
for inviting me, and I hope my screen isn't too dark. I realized my room got darker and I didn't turn the lights on. So I hope you can still see me.
We can.
Okay, good.
thanks for all the insights and really, really poignant comments. So, and thank you to all of our listeners. This has been Life and Limb. Again, thanks to Marty Robinson, my prosthetist, a bit of a legend in the industry, in the profession himself, no doubt. Check out previous podcasts and our upcoming guests on our website at thrivemag.ca, and you can read about others who are thriving with limb loss or limb difference and plenty more at thrivemag.ca too. Until next time, live well.